Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Masonic Effects. So such a pleasure to have you here. I've been troubled over the past week, and we'll get into that. First off, I want to correct an oversight and give my regards to listeners from Brazil, and as well South Africa, Japan, Russia, Greece, Britain. I wish I had a little more specificity about that. Zambia, and United States of America, and Canada. It's a pleasure, of course, to have you pull in and share a bit of your time, your valuable time, to talk on themes that presumably resonate with men, people inclined toward the thinking of ancient and accepted Freemasonry. To begin today, though, I want to ask you if you think are we the creation of intelligence, or are we the creation of emotion? Is it somewhere in there? Because I think it matters. I think we approach the craft and we experience the craft on different levels at the same time. I know some of you out there are saying, "Man, here he goes again. He's really hinting around emotional intelligence." Well, that may have been, that I don't think that's my intent. Well, it isn't my intention, but I can certainly understand how you might feel that. And but today's program, I think, is going to be a bit more of a challenge. Certainly will be here. And to listeners throughout the world, we are working on this technical problem. I have a very lovely man who's been helping me to troubleshoot. Fingers crossed that it's solved today. And it has to do with the feedback. If you're picking this up and downloading it after the program, you may find that the music is broken up. And we're trying to troubleshoot that issue. Is this about a digital licensing or some such thing? Stay tuned. But we'll try to provide you with a content that is stimulating and engaging. And, it's one half of the conversation that we would have should our circumstance be different and we were able to talk, you and I, together. The outcomes of this may be quite different, and no doubt but nevertheless stimulating. So I need to know if you can, if we can talk about the aim of the program. And I think the reflection for a lot of thinking is somewhere between a beauty and the beauty of the craft and the grace and the intelligence that it conveys. I'm not so much anymore thinking about, the struggles that lodges have. I think I've been, given some examples lately, working with a lodge that is spiraling, not uncommon, trying to inject a bit of substance so that the lodge can find its way and make some decisions on its own and reform, recalibrate in a way. I'll keep you posted of that periodically as we go along. It's a struggle. Free will and accord being what it is, it's not popular to be even though invited, it's not easy. It's not popular for lodges to reassess and step forward and change when they don't have that provenance. Life goes on. So does masonry. But today, I want to share with you a question. I think I've been looking at the breakdown of the program in terms of masonry. I have commentary to like we would if we were talking. The waiter comes around with a tray of tea. We sit down and we start to talk. Art, the poetry, the music, the history, the commentary, I think they are fragments or pieces of the same structure. The poetry encourages us to look a little deeper at what's going on, to notice. We'll talk more about that today, as I love to do that. The history is a reminder of it's certainly not a reminder of the totality of the past, where we were, but it's an allusion to it. It's a small glimpse, a narrow glimpse at that totality of history. There's so much. And as with anything in life, when we're recalling, we always seem to be able to recognize paradox and confusion. That leads, can lead to tensions and conflicts and that type of thing. But the source of it is, I think, more reasonable. We become confused. We get, some of you will be students that will have heard the term cognitive dissonance. The input, it doesn't fit. We have a set of ideas, or we have ideas, and the information that we're getting conflicts with that or doesn't fit. Our brain is gratefully, it's elastic, but there are some things where we call them, we'll just look at this in terms of a flaw in the DNA of our logic, or an anomaly. It's not so much even a flaw or a mutation in that DNA. The things that help us to survive generations on for thousands of years. Yeah. But we don't ever get too far ahead of ourselves, do we? The craft, I think we can admit it's a guidepost. For some of us, it comes when it inspires or it encourages the recognition, the legitimacy of knowing yourself. But that is a coming to terms with ego, with ambition. And then when we strip those away, and we do here in this program, because it's like, within the broader framework, those things seem to be limits. A professor I know quite well talked with me a long time ago, very long time ago, and about mistrust. People can't really trust somebody with them that's ambitious, because, and I think it made some sense at the time, and it still does. There's a doubt about the motivation and the drive. We see ourselves as overcoming those caveats, not in any way announcing that we're superior to the world in any, but that we are of students. We're observant, that we notice things, and we notice consistency, and out of that, we find ourselves talking about common sense. And that, in some way, I find that very comfortable, because when I'm relying, when we're turning to the great minds, the philosophers, they weren't describing, they were describing information as in terms of the validity of it. No, you may not agree with the process, but if you examine their arguments, very often we see the ingredients that lead them to certain conclusions. It's like anything. It's like doing research. We're not saying we're creating the grand theory of the universe. We're saying within these variables, these are the conclusions that we're going to examine. These are the effects that we're, the relationships that we're going to examine. Change those variables, and the conclusion changes. The whole process changes. And we accept that, because each step, each time that we do that, and each time we can replicate, or somebody objectively can replicate the study, it adds to our body of knowledge. It adds to it in a very, very beautiful way. I want to share just a short piece from a piece of work from actually December 24th, 2020, by Mario Savioni. And it's entitled, "Is Poetry the Result of Intelligence or Feelings?" And I think he just captured, it was just a very, very beautiful paragraph here. "Poetry, at least for me, comes like a stream of consciousness. And if I can capture its flow exactly, I usually have a good poem. There have been poems that I have manufactured. I think both come from ekphrasic events, whether in life or from other artistic work, like Blankets Me, that blankets me with its aesthetic sentiments." Oh, you just, it's like adding the, changing the tones and the color of the world. Is poetry a byproduct of intelligence or feelings? Let's say both. Some might say the person with mere intelligence, because poetry embodies an emotional sensitivity, and often intelligent poems like those of George Oppen, O-P-P-E-N, engage one's appreciation for meaning inherent in arrangement and meaning. But Oppen is a man endowed with pitch, perfect emotional aesthetics. You would have to know what words to pick and what linguistic elements would speak so eloquently. Mm-hmm. Does it satisfy us that does it stimulate us in some way, stimulate our thinking or calm us or affirm? I think it does. I think it can. I think it can, and for many, it's an acknowledgement, isn't it? It's an acknowledgement that we don't. It's a validation, is the craft. And you can see why, where I am, there's a tremendous effort for men to be self-validating, to assert that their way of thinking is purposeful and has meaning. Of course, it really leads a lot of these men to either be capitulating, or to be asserting this their own framework, which is, as you can imagine, quite legitimate. But at the same instance, we had hoped to open the mind, so not to and to look through the eyes of those who don't necessarily agree with our thinking, alternate ways of thinking and being. And that is certainly consistent with the ratings of, with the manner and wording of our ritual. Free will and accord we have these beautiful little phrases, and that's one of them. We come to terms every time we're looking at the work of great minds. It is to compare the one of these. I think the striking comparisons is about archetypes, and I think that Masonry, in so many ways, is encouraging us to be the archetype, to create the archetype of our archetype, to present that to the world, to at least understand that. How do you do that if you're fussing around with your fit, whether you fit in with it, whether you're understanding the group dynamics? Especially when you're in groups where not everybody is has that focus, which is normal in Masonry around here. We don't really ask too many of those questions. When we are screening people, or people are coming to our door. In fact, in some places that's considered just very bad manners here. I want to get into the program, and I think I'm a bit hesitant because I want this to work, and I want you to be able to pick up the music. If not, and it's the microphone narrative, I can't apologize for that. But we will try to either reconfigure the program if I can no longer I package music with this program for whatever reason. We will reconfigure the program, but we'll continue. We'll continue here. We continue with some work by a musician, Chris Boddy. I think you like this. Not quite lounge music. No, no. It's soothing. Produced. Yeah. I wasn't in a particularly generous state of mind when I was creating this, working on this commentary. And you'll hear it in the words. Influence. And don't judge me too harshly. Today we carry on as we have, ignoring common sense, ignoring history, until we are standing over the wreckage, offering feeble explanations to fill the silence. Our new creator isn't new anymore. Nietzsche stares out at us from t-shirts while we showed out how domination and ideology continue a repeating narrative. Does it matter that we try to examine the impertinent questions that trigger our superiors? Our Masonic beliefs teach us we each have impact, just as we each have agency. We may think change comes from the largest mass of like-minded until we realize how decisions are made and what motivation they serve. The craft lets us know one man can make a difference. One person can make a difference. He can leave beauty in his production for generations to experience. Moment by moment, science is pulling back veils. We know the effect of a smile. We know a sports field makes a tremendous difference in the development of a child. We know having enough to eat, water, and shelter and safety are necessary for people and nations to achieve their destiny. It isn't idle talk to perform charitable acts because someone in our community is in need. Thankfully, Masonry has gathered together a library of mnemonics to help us achieve the goal if we are prepared to put in the time and effort. It is unapologetic about our collective purpose, which brings us to a fundamental question about relevance. Do we increase marketing value added, thinking that's how insight is instilled? Come to us and something will happen. It is what you take with you when you ponder the process of Masonry that matters. Entitlement and privilege don't end when liberty, fraternity, and equality become the defining motto. Neither did darkness end when we adopted Aude, Vide, Tace in our vocabulary. If it helps to understand, we progress individually. Then Masonic influence has served a purpose. The tiniest of change is often a harbinger of unstoppable things to come. That's Duke Ellington and Johnny Hodges. Poetry. Leaning in, paying attention, recalibrating. Doesn't make the rest of anything really change, except it's like a wake-up. A little reminder that, yes, we are distracted and we need to focus. There are times, but it's possible to do that without losing the detail, without savoring. Here I'm tapping into, I think, kind of an interesting read. If you're I'm a lifelong subscriber to The Guardian. I'm just trying to find, legitimate, authenticated news. But anyway, periodically they run a poem of the week, and this is what struck me as really interesting. I happened to come at this from a different to my own way of thinking. I was looking for poetry. And had never really looked at the plays of Shakespeare, and thought they are just as beautiful, intricate poems. And I wondered if there were pieces within those stories that would be worth looking at as a poem in itself. Lo and behold, they did a poem of the week from A Midsummer Night's Dream, one of my favorites because of the just the fluidity, the playfulness. And here they're throwing names around as they tend to. Pepe's described as, the character, the most insipid, ridiculous play I ever saw. And Chesterton thought a greater psychological triumph than Hamlet. Coleridge believed that Shakespeare had conceived the whole play as a dream. It is, of course, A Midsummer Night's Dream, fondly known in theatrical circles as simply The Dream. If it's a dream, it's the kind that's close to poetry. Admittedly, Shakespeare's language is not particularly poetic, but the action is. The echoes, dualities, oppositions, and resolutions are like a cross-section through poetic structure, and the power of the imagination is its major theme. You see where you go for ideas about masonry? This week's honorary poem is one of the more highly wrought speeches and one of the most widely quoted. It is the speech made by Theseus, Duke of Athens, at the beginning of Act 5. More strange than true, I never may believe these antique fables, these fairy toys. By now, all the magical mayhem has been resolved, and a triple wedding is in view, including that of Theseus himself to Queen of the Amazons, Hippolyta. it is time to submit the moonlight creative underworld to clear thinking. Theosis is the rational man in the play. His correlation of poetry with eye-rolling frenzy lifted from the context was later to nourish the romantic view of inspiration and influences the popular view of poets and poetry to this day. But the speech is hardly a paean to creativity. Theosis is often loftily amused, if not right down mocking, the lunatic, the lover, the poet, are of imagination all compact. This speech has an ironical framework, of course, provided by the play itself. And the play will not finish, however, until the mechanicals have performed their version of Paramus and Thisbe. If Theosis represents the power of the rational, Nick Bottom and his troupe are surely apologists for the imagination. "'Tis strange, my Theosis," says Hippolyta, "that these lovers speak of." Theosis goes on, "More strange than true, I never may believe these antique fables, nor these fairy toys. Lovers and madmen have such seething brains, such shaping fantasies that apprehend more than cool reason ever comprehends. The lunatic, the lover, the poet are of imagination all compact. One sees more devils than vast hell can hold." That is, the madman, the lover, all as frantic, sees Helen's beauty in a brow of Egypt. The poet's eye, in a fine frenzy rolling, doth glance from heaven to earth, from earth to heaven, and as imagination bodies forth the forms of things unknown, the poet's pen turns them to shapes and gives to airy nothing a local habitation and a name. Such tricks have strong imagination, that if it would but apprehend some joy, it comprehends some bringer of that joy, more in the night imagining some fear. How easy is a bush supposed a bear? Hippolyta goes on, "But all the story of the night told over, and all the minds transfigured so together, more witnessed than fancied images, and grows to something of great consistency. But however strange and admirable." It's like having a mouthful of something very delicious and just letting it settle to the back of your throat, just savoring the moment. Nobody else knows that. Nobody knows your private moments. When a line in a poem, "the poet's eye in a fine frenzy rolling, doth glance from heaven to earth, from earth to heaven." Nobody knows what that triggers in your imagination. You may be trying to focus the poet's eye, but it triggers other thoughts. It triggers patterns of thoughts, connections, and you rush along with them. Nobody knows that. That's your growth. That's your exploration. What comes to mind when you are walking quietly in the early morning, or when you're watching the last rays of sun, this fading? What goes through your mind? Well, nobody knows that. You do. I always found it interesting when, you know, I would be studying something and it would be a reminder, a little bit of a self-reflection. It wasn't like it was a shock. It was like a reminder of something you already knew, or I already knew. And often science is like that. It's like telling us these different conclusions, but it feels like we already knew it, but we needed to be reminded. We already know mathematics, not necessarily computation, but when the mathematical theories are consistent and we begin to consider a quantum theory, string theory, what does that do for us? It increases our trust that these figures are infallible. These computations are infallible. Well, we do that very cautiously. We do the same with our philosophers. Not everybody is of that kind of intensity. Most, it's like, you give me an answer that I can fit in right now and move on. I don't want to linger over it too much, but I don't want a lot of unnecessary complications coming out of it either. So if I have something that leads me to a better result, better in the sense that it's accomplished more of the aim, and that I have the sense that I acknowledge that I've had a bit of a heads up, that it comes as no surprise, and then I can feel I've had a part to play in it. The laws of the logic doesn't come and go because of that, and that material is what it is, whether I know it or not. Here, don't believe me. There's Red Garland. Mathematics, just listen, some beautiful mathematics. I know why, and so do you. Red Garland. Bear with me, brethren. You're helping me here sort some things out in the background here, technical things. I apologize. We'll try and smooth this out. Here we're turning our attention to the history. And there's an event in the lodge. Something's happened that's different. And we begin with an entreaty about Masonic songs. And there's been an event, a big event. Here we are in Holland, huh? Yeah. The French army has already invaded the Dutch Republic and routed the Prussians. And by their consent, the British occupiers and counter-revolutionaries. And the Amsterdam Patriots and Republicans in turn rose in rebellion and proclaimed a new Batavian Revolution. Other cities quickly followed, but nowhere was the enthusiasm greater for the new and long frustrated revolution than in Amsterdam. On the 24th of January, La Bien-Aimée met in the first year of Batavian freedom. Within less than a month, the lodge itself puts into effect its understanding of the internationally established set of revolutionary principles. The minutes of the day open with the slogan in Dutch, liberty, fraternity, equality. Yeah. Now, in the lodge, an entirely new ceremony is observed at the feast because, quote, all distinctions breaking equality have been abolished unless they are associated with a necessary order. The singing of Masonic songs is now preceded by the singing of the hymn to the French Republic, La Masserie. The Grand Master from The Hague is present. Once the Baron von Boitzeller, he has become Bürger, which means citizen. Bürger Boitzeller. Exiled brothers are embraced for having advocated the three knights of the people. Not least the servant J. Voigt, who might have been one of those who had donated his labor because his master in life was also master of the lodge. And the other servants were finally bid to enter as they belonged to this degree on the grounds of equality and thus qualifying them as members as of the order. Voigt is thanked, particularly it being wished that the knot of alliance between the French and Batavian commonwealths, which he had wished for so industriously, may hold out without ever untying. Support for the patriot cause and the revolution extended deeply into Dutch society, just as did Orangism to servants and artisans. The problem with words like equality is not that they simply float in the air, but rather they are possessed by people who oftentimes begin to believe that they apply to themselves. In the Masonic temple, the fantasy of equality could be given a verbal reality so that actually impossible anywhere. The orator now routinely refers to the equality of the people. New members are routinely introduced as citizens. And the master orator, or at least one other member of the lodge were also members of the new Revolutionary Council that governed in Amsterdam. Change happens. Doesn't exactly feel like it happens because, huh? Brethren, so much is happening in the world that would test the beliefs of good men. We don't have a choice to prevail or not, but to understand what's going on, that's an effort. The outcome, well, we need to be encouraging the outcome of the resolution of these kind of the insanity that's being imposed. We're being tested in a way. Our beliefs are certainly being tested. In some ways, I have this feeling that we've forgotten the pain and the enormous suffering of the Second World War, and so we're going to be reminded again. And I don't know how to stop it, other than, you know, if I was thinking it was inevitable, I'd want to see it accelerate so we can get to the end of it sooner. But that's absurd. That's, you know, that's insanity in itself. Bring on the pain so that the end of it comes sooner. Mm-hmm. We prevail. We aren't 1920s. We're not living in the 30s. No, we are 2023. And we have different tools at our fingertips. We have this thing that we're still messing around with, social media. Oh, it's still in the hands of oligarchs. But that's the kind of world that we've been, you know, subscribed to for a long time. The notion that something will trickle down on us. Well, a lot of people are upset, and whatever's trickling down isn't to their liking. So we do what we do. We fracture, we become angry and frustrated, and we carry on. The concern that I have isn't for the likes of me. I'm an old man now. I've lived my life. It's what's happening with those little children. there is no side. When you're a little person, there's no side. It's just you struggle to get by and, you know, have people around that you can trust. And I know that with all of the work, we know that the people closest to us are not always trustworthy, but what else do you have when you're little? Until you can establish more independence and make your own way. Our beliefs are being tested. So how do we, and we need to be, I think, judicious in the way that we express them. Always judicious. And that's not easy, but, you know, again, I could glibly say nothing about the craft is easy. Nothing about intellectual change in way of thinking and understanding that runs counter to whatever the media or the news, evening news, has in store for us. You be cautious, be careful, be thoughtful. There are people out there that are like-minded and you can trust. And I think that's going to be more important in the next 15 or 20 years than it's been before. While mankind is doing what mankind does to itself, nature is not really put off. Nature is reacting and doing what it does, and we ought to be paying, I think, at least acknowledging that it may be right. Nature, after all, has the prerogative. Something about existential crisis is becoming a reality, eh? Or it has been for a long time. We're just trying to ignore it for as long as we possibly could. Come back next week. Masonic effects. We may not solve the problems of the world, but we'll certainly understand our position in this and commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. They seem to be needed more now than usual. And maybe that's just the rantings of a silly old man. Thanks for joining us today. Look forward to being with you again. Thank you.